Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour. Darkest Hour is nominated for 6 Oscars, including Best Picture. In the film, Gary Oldman plays Winston Churchill. Oldman has already won a Golden Globe and Screen Actors Guild Award for his performance, and he's currently the frontrunner to win an Oscar for actor in a leading role.
Darkest Hour is set in the early stages of World War II. It tells the story of Churchill's difficult choice between negotiating peace with Germany and continuing to fight what seemed to be a losing battle. It's a different side of the same story Christopher Nolan told in Dunkirk, which is also nominated for Best Picture this year. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes. We're talking about the Gary Oldman performance and the multiple angles on the same historical moment in this episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour. Also with us is Glenn Weldon from NPR's Arts Desk. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And also joining us, the host of Slate's Represent podcast, Aisha Harris. Hey, Aisha.
Hey, Linda.
I want to go first to Glenn, because you told me, Glenn, that you have a take on Darkest Hour, and I'm not sure I do. So hit me with your take
on Darkest
Hour. All
right, well, I'll be honest. I went into this film with my critical arms crossed, which is not fair, right? The job is to be at least notionally open to every film.
Yes.
But we talked about this before, and when you said you hadn't seen it yet, I said, yeah, but doesn't it feel like you have?
Mm-hmm.
I have now seen this film, and it feels like I have.
Yeah.
My feeling toward this film has not changed. Let's do a little service journalism and point out what this film does that you might not think it does just from the trailer. Gary Oldman is making the Oscar buzz rounds now, and he keeps saying that he didn't want to do just the pugnacious bulldog Churchill you see in the newsreels, you see, say, John Lithgow doing on The Crown. When he looked at Churchill, he saw somebody who was mischievous and with a glint in his eye. And so that's why, if anything about this film surprised me, is that it has a slightly lighter touch, a lighter tone than you. If you were expecting dour, or it's British, we should say doer, a film that's all harump, harump, harump. There's a lot of harump, harump,
there's
harump.
There's a lot of harump, harump, harump.
But there is attempts at humor. It also does a smart thing we've talked about many times that biopics need to do, which is to take a very thin slice of time, not try to do he was born, blah, 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 blah,
right.
But take a thin slice. This is just 3 weeks.
In that sense, it's not really a biopic. It's just
right,
a historical film.
Absolutely. That said, the deal with a biopic is that you take a messy human life, right, or a messy event, and you give it some kind of structure. And it turns out there's a line that I am not prepared for a film like this to cross. I'm okay with you combining characters together if it makes for a more efficient storytelling. I'm okay with you expanding time or collapsing time. You can even, to make connective tissue between things, you can impute some motivation even so if you make an educated guess at it. What you can't do is what this film does, which is this film's dramatic turn, this film's climax, the very tippity-top of this film's Freytag's pyramid is completely invented. And that's not the deal. That's not the deal I made with the film, right? Like, there's all this stuff happening that we have some kind of record for. So that's what you have to stick with, right? You can't just invent. You can invent lots of stuff. You cannot invent the thing that changes the character's mind, that creates the whole tension of this movie.
Well, that resolves the tension. Right. There's this very difficult question he's trying to answer, which is, we appear to be in an almost impossible situation. Is it better to negotiate with Hitler, or is it better to continue to fight? And as you say, the entire resolution to that conflict is made up, which means that whatever the real reasoning was, whatever his real thought process was, it remains completely opaque. And that's what I find strange.
And for that reason, that scene feels completely inauthentic.
Yeah.
Because it is, and also because dramatically it doesn't work. Dramatically, it's too pat.
It also involves the movie just kind of wandering off the rails. It doesn't fly off the rails. It just wanders off the rails for this very long, fabricated scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, first of all, the genre of this movie is Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
Every clip in this movie, you could drop the proverbial needle on any point on the record that is this movie. I'm sounding like a very old man. And you would get an Oscar clip.
Shouldn't we appease Hitler? No, we can't appease Hitler!
It's the whole thing.
That's uncanny. Uncanny.
You know, what's funny is it's not that far.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
And I predicted after seeing this movie, because I saw this before they announced the Oscar nominations, I was like, this is going to get nominated for Best Picture. This is the kind of movie that used to routinely get nominated for Best Picture every year. It's very loud and stompy and speechy. And Gary Oldman is really, really good in it. But I want to make a larger point when I talk about this performance to say that the Oscars, I think, overweight the art of imitation. Mm-hmm. That when you have an actor come in and do kind of a spot-on, heavily prostheticed, kind of perfect imitation of a historic figure, it tends to get treated as more acting instead of what I think it is, which is less acting. Mm. It's a certain amount, it's impersonation. And, and, you know, we just had the Grammys. They did not give a Grammy Award for Best Cover Band. They do not give a MacArthur Genius Grant to Frank Caliendo.
And more's the pity.
And I don't mean that. And I don't mean that to compare Gary Oldman's performance as Winston Churchill to Frank Caliendo's John Madden or Robert De Niro. But for some reason we have inflated the art of historical mimicry.
Yeah, but I know the reason. The reason is, think about it. It all of a sudden acting, which is an art, becomes objective. Somebody can look at this and go, oh, he got very close to this milestone, this mark.
Sure.
And that's it. It takes all of the mystery out of acting, seemingly, and says, okay, we now have this objective that you can measure this performance against.
It takes all the creation of character out of acting. And this is my modest proposal. And then let's let Aisha speak. I'm so sorry.
I'm saving it up.
This is my modest proposal. Instead of dividing acting categories by gender, let's divide acting categories the way we divide screenplays. Best original performance, best adapted performance. Uh-huh. Best original supporting performance, best adapted performance. Best original performance, you got your Sally Hawkins, you got your Timothée Chalamet, you got your Daniel Kaluuya, you got your Saoirse Ronan. Best adapted performance, you've got your Gary Oldman, your Meryl Streep, your Margot Robbie, your Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
It is a different skill set. It is a much different skill set than being a man versus being a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Mm, yeah. All right. I really want to know.
I do too.
How much Aisha loved Darkest Hour. Tell me about Darkest Hour, Aisha.
Well, like Glenn, I also went into this feeling as though I was going to not like this movie. I'm not primed to like this movie. I generally tend to dislike British period pieces. Just as a general rule, I find them very boring and droll. And I just, everyone talks like this and is very prim and proper. And it's always about the upper class and rarely about the lower class and then the working class. And so I went into it with that feeling. And that being said, I still hated this movie.
Went in with that feeling, left with that feeling also.
Takes a left turn and another left turn.
I really did. And I agree with Steve's point about the idea that this is just like, this is easily measurable. Gary Oldman's performance is easily measurable. And that kind of aligns it with sports, right? Because that's, I always say the Oscars are like my Super Bowl. And people are like, well, that's not the same thing because the Super Bowl is like, you can, like, the right person wins. Like, you know the right team wins. And with the Oscars, it's like, well, there's this campaigning, there's blah, blah, blah. But I do agree that, like, I actually think it's a really smart idea to have the different categories. Because I think when you have someone like Gary Oldman, and I even think there should be a difference maybe between actors who actually take on the character without having prosthetics and those who do use prosthetics, just because I feel like at least 75% of the acting in this was the prosthetics. I'm sorry. I was not enamored by Gary Oldman by any means. I was also very annoyed. I mean, I know it's World War II and women were not necessarily as involved, but like I was annoyed, but the only two women were sort of like the moral compass of Winston Churchill. His wife, played by Kristin Scott Thomas, she keeps saying, I believe in you. I want people to like you. I don't like that people don't like you. And then you have Lily James, who's like, how does she go from playing Cinderella to now being like the sidekick in this like weird historical fiction movie? It just bugged me that she was like, type, 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 and oh, I'm going to be so shocked every time you throw something at me or when you get very blubbery and mad. And and oh, and yes, those are essentially my feelings.
Yeah.
It was painful to watch. I will say the other thing I will say is that I saw this last night, as of this recording, and so I saw it with a general audience. It wasn't like a screening of critics,
mm-hmm.
and people were eating this up,
yep.
like laughing and chuckling at every little quirky, funny, cantankerous thing that Winston Churchill said, and I was just like, really? Is yeah. this what people think of this type of, like,
were you the youngest person at the screening?
Oh, good question. I don't know. I got there right as the yeah. lights were dimming. I got
so
there
you didn't
just
get a
in
chance
time,
to
so
check
I could,
out the crowd.
No, but they were most, it was pretty much all white people. So mm-hmm. there's that.
yeah. Yeah, I agree with you about a lot of this. And I also think it's interesting what you say about the women, because I had the same reaction, partly because Kristen Scott Thomas in particular is an actress that I enjoy so much and like so much. And I think the brief glimpses that you get of her character, who is Churchill's wife, are interesting and bring at least an angle to it, but then she's not in it very much. And there's one moment in particular where she seems to be doing something very interesting or having a very interesting kind of side moment with herself. And then it's just sort of, it fritters away. And, it, you know, it's still a good performance and all that stuff. But I feel like it's a very Aaron Sorkin-y way to use women in a drama like this, because they exist. They are wonderful people who exist to make men great. And that's their greatness. You know, they underscore for men the real moral stakes. And as Aisha said, it's World War II. It makes a certain amount of sense, historically speaking. But at the same time, that's one of the consequences of continuing to choose this kind of story as the kind of story to tell over and over and over again. And the other thing that I thought was so interesting about it, as we mentioned, it's basically the same story as Dunkirk.
Right.
It's basically the same mm-hmm. slice of history as Dunkirk. And at the very end of Dunkirk, it's not really a spoiler, it's history, but at the very end of Dunkirk, you see some of the soldiers who have been rescued from, you know, in this massive effort, returning home, and sort of the famous speech, the famous Churchill speech about we will fight on the beaches and all of that, is happening as they are coming home, right? And there's a way in which I felt like Nolan was kind of undercutting
Absolutely.
The great man-ness of war, specifically as a way of saying, you can tell the stories of how great men sit around and argue about war, but really war comes down to young men trapped, dying, drowning, being shot, trying to survive. And so it was really unfortunate timing for Darkest Hour mm-hmm. for me that it comes out in the same year where it's basically, to me, the kind of film that Nolan is sort of backhanding
right,
in
yeah.
making Dunkirk and in ending it that way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what I had said about this movie is earlier is it's like if you saw Lady Bird and then you saw the Timothy Chalamet character making his autobiographical film, like, that he directed himself. Helotite, it's called. The same story, but from a much less interesting perspective.
Yeah.
And so it that was a challenge for me as well.
Yeah, I mean, Gary Oldman has had a long, very quirky career. And I just kept sitting there thinking, the character he played in Prick Up Your Ears would hate this film, would hate everything this film stands yeah. for. It is the polar opposite. And so when he wins on Oscar night, and I expect he will, not only because he's had such a long career, I'm going to say that he won for Sid and Nancy, for Prick Up Your Ears, for Track 29, a very weird film that this is the antithesis of. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are Dead, Bram Stoker's Dracula, which is a chewy, wonderful
movie.
But he's so wonderful and weird. Fifth Element, of course. Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. That's what he's going to win.
Fifth Element, of course.
Fifth Element, of course.
Yeah. I feel like the film feels inevitable in the sense that, just like you said, if you've seen the trailer, you've seen this movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole thing to me feels kind of underbaked. Like one of the things I said to somebody was like, it's like if it was on Nat Geo, mm-hmm. not the fun part of Nat Geo, with the science and all that stuff.
It's also, if it is like how a decision gets made, it has this like, shall we be brave or shall we cower?
That's the other thing.
No, we shall be brave. What?
There is never any real sense that, I mean, for one thing, it's history. I know what happened. Also, I know what happened because I just saw it in another movie 6 months ago. I think also the other thing is, For me, this is a movie that goes back to the constant underlying fear of threats from without, a nation facing threats from without, and that everyone has to commit to the national identity and face threats from without. And maybe that's just not where my head is right now in terms of what's most interesting to contemplate.
Sure.
I don't know.
I will also add that just going back to this idea of like, why do we need to see another movie in which the rich and powerful and wealthy, mostly white men, are making all these decisions, is that the way that that moment is filmed, is written, is just like, we're going to bring in the common folk and we're going to parade them around. And it's just very icky and really cheesy in the like, please, sir, can I have some more kind of way.
And,
like, it's just.
Yeah. And one black guy.
Named Marcus, of course.
All right. Well,
they said his name like five times.
It is nominated for Best Picture. Gary Oldman is probably going to win Best Actor. Darkest Hour, available near you in a theater.
A film out now.
But seriously, come and find us on Facebook, facebook.com/PCHH. Tweet us at PCHH. Tell us what you loved about Darkest Hour, or, of course, what you didn't. When we come back, it will be time to talk about what's making us happy this week. So come right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Starbucks. For the past 43 years, Starbucks has served their bold signature espresso. But for the first time ever, they're introducing a second espresso, Starbucks Blonde Espresso. It's smooth and subtly sweet. So whatever your drink is, from a flat white to an iced Americano, try it with Starbucks Blonde Espresso. And as always, you can order ahead on your Starbucks app.
Do you love trivia, puzzles, nerdy games, and humor? What about interviews with actors, musicians, and people from all walks of life? Yeah? Then join me, Ophira Eisenberg, host of NPR's Ask Me Another, every week on the NPR One app and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week, What's Making Us Happy This Week. Stephen Thompson, what's making you happy this week?
In 2015, the wonderful composer Max Richter released an 8-hour piece of music called Sleep, which, as you might imagine, was meant to be heard while you sleep. I do love the idea of them like getting overconfident and like making 45 minutes of music and then just like 7 hours of silence because they just know it. They just know you're going to stop. I mean, I love this kind of thing. As we've discussed on the show before, I have a huge Spotify playlist called Songs for Editing that is full of this kind of dreamy, head-filling music. This is a little quiet for that purpose, but I've been listening to this record more and more, for example, as I try to fall asleep, and it is enormously lovely. I was reminded of it because Max Richter is coming to South by Southwest and performing it in a very long concert in which they are going to set up the venue with 200 beds. I have been really loving and getting enveloped in this gorgeous piece of music. I really love everything this guy touches. Max Richter, Sleep.
Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
Answer Me This is a British podcast now in its 11th year. So I'm jumping on this bandwagon, but I'm at the very tail of it. It's been rolling for a while. It's hosted by Helen Zaltzman, who I've talked about many times on the show, the great and good Helen Zaltzman, host of The Allusionist, which is a great sort of etymology podcast. Also a guy named Ali Mann, with whom I was not familiar with before this, and Martin the Sound Man, who's actually Helen's husband. Premise is simple. They answer questions asked of them by the public. The kind of questions range from etiquette advice to mostly purely informational. Questions that I would classify as eminently Googleable. Yet they ask them by the ton. And you can Skype your question in, you can call it in, or you can email it in. But to email it in, you have to type out answermethispodcast@googlemail.com. You have to type the word Google and plus 27 other characters, and then type out your question. So why does anybody do this? I'll tell you why. Because they have a great rapport. They are very funny. They're very smart, but they are egregiously charming. So charming that I am now binging this podcast. It's all I'm listening to. This happens every so often, right? You just fall in love with a dynamic, right, between people. And this happened to me with Jordan Jesse Go and Stop Podcasting Yourself and Hello from the Magic Tavern and Gilmore Guys and Blank Check and Bam Bam. It happens when you just get this, we've talked about it before, this unidirectional intimacy, because they keep parceling out little things about their lives. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm going back through time, back through their archives. Mm-hmm. I'm Benjamin Buttoning their lives, essentially. Yeah. But I love this. It's called Answer Me This.
Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Aisha Harris, what is making you happy this week?
Well, I was at Sundance and nice. I saw quite a few movies, but there was one movie in particular that I really loved, and I think I came away with being my favorite of the bunch that I saw, and it's called The Miseducation of Cameron Post. It's a American-British drama. It's directed by Desiree Akhavan, and it's based on a novel of the same name by Emily M. Danforth, and it stars Chloe Grace Moretz, who you might know from as Hit Girl from Kick-Ass and a few other things. But this, I think, might turn out to be sort of her breakout hit. And I guess it's been described, I think, accurately as sort of a version of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Chloe Grace Moretz plays Cameron Post. She's a teenager in 1993, it's set, and she gets caught hooking up with her girlfriend, and it causes a stir, and she's sent to a gay conversion therapy camp. Of course, there's like a cast of, you know, different quirky characters and things like that that call up the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. But it's also just like really smart, funny, but also heartbreaking. The script is great. And I'll be curious to see how it's received. It won the Grand Jury Prize, and I think it was picked up by someone to distribute. So people will be able to see it eventually. But I'll be curious to see, especially in the wake of something like Call Me By Your Name, a movie that has been sort of celebrated for not being about like queer characters who are suffering and are like, you know, are being tortured in any sort of way, whereas this movie is very much like, it is very, very deep and dark and gets very deep and dark. But I do think that it's just a lovely story. I was very moved by it, and I just hope everyone will check it out whenever it winds up in theaters.
Thank you very much, Aisha. The Miseducation of Cameron Post. What is making me happy this week is a music documentary currently available on HBO. It premiered this week. You can find it on your various HBO on-demand services. It is called May It Last, and it follows the recording of the Avett Brothers record, True Sadness, if you know that one. The Avett Brothers, if you're not familiar, are a band of the type often referred to as Americana, a name I do not really like because it means too many things and no things at the same time. But you do get some foot stomping and clapping and bluegrass and things like that. But they also do some really beautiful, beautiful slow songs and kind of thumping upbeat songs, and they are great. And the film follows both kind of their musical journey, I guess I could say, but also kind of what it means to be a family band. The Avett Brothers are actually, you know, led by a pair of actual brothers. There's a lot of that good stuff. But the thing that I really like about it is it's not a behind the music thing where everybody is angry at each other all the time. It's actually a portrait of a very loving family and a very loving band. It's also a band I very much love, so it's very easy for me to recommend because you get to hear them perform a lot and also do their work and write songs. Another interesting note, this one of the directors is Judd Apatow, who has this long history of kind of being interested in the maturation of young men. And so in that way, it's on brand for him too. So it's a really terrific film. It's called May It Last, A Portrait of the Avett Brothers. It's available on HBO. Seek it out. May It Last. It is called That Is What Is Making Me Happy this week. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at NPR Monkey C. You can find Steven at I Dislike Steven. You can find Glenn at GH Weldon. And you can follow Aisha Harris at Crafting My Style. You can follow our producer Jessica Reedy at Jessica_Reedy. And our producer emeritus and music director Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff. That's KATZIF. Mike's band Hello Come In provides our in and out music, which you are bobbing your head to right now. Thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for making time for us, Aisha. And thanks for listening. And if you have a second and you're so inclined, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps more folks to find the show. We will see all of you back here next week.